it showed him actually driving around several times looking for somebody.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Always Bev, The Ripple Effect. I am your host, Barb Jordan. For the first-time listeners out there, I want to let you know that my podcast is not labeled a true crime podcast. Actually, if there was a place for it, it would be it's a podcast about education, a podcast about educating you on safety. And I use true stories. I use real-life experiences, but I focus on the backstory so that it resonates with the listeners. And if we can learn from the tragedies of these victims, it'll help us value and honor their lives.
The main reason I do it is because of Samantha. I don't want anybody to forget who she is. I'm trying to keep her memory alive.
I can relate to this. I can relate to how hard and difficult it is to talk about somebody so close to you, somebody who you love so dearly, and how they are so wrongfully and brutally taken away. And I think that today's guest has so much courage. I respect him so much, not only for coming on this podcast, going through the pain of sharing Sammy's story, but what he's doing now to help educate all of us so this type of brutal crime never happens again. All right, my guest today is Seymour Josephson. He is the father of Samantha Josephson. First of all, I want to thank you so much for all the work that you do and for joining me here today on this episode.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about Sam. Obviously, she was a wonderful young woman. Tell us a little bit about her.
I get very emotional about it, so I apologize. So Samantha was a fun, free-spirited, loving, fantastic daughter, fantastic friend. And I think the best way to describe Samantha as a friend and the type of person that she is or that she was at the vigil here in Robbinsville when we got back from South Carolina. There was a vigil located a couple miles from our house, and a couple hundred people showed up, and a bunch of her friends got up to speak. And each one said that she was her best friend. And there was probably about eight of the kids got up to say, no, she was my best friend. No, she was my best friend. And there were a couple of her friends that couldn't even get up to speak because they were so devastated. So that to me really describes the type of person that she was and how she made all of her friends feel. You know, she made them feel special. She lit up a room when she walked in. She was just a genuine, great person. Smart. She didn't want to let people know how smart she actually was. She was embarrassed to a certain degree that she had a full scholarship to law school. She only told a handful of people. It was more Marcy and I talking about it and telling friends and telling people that she did have a scholarship to go to law school. So she worked hard and she was a smart and really good kid.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I know that for parents who have their kids go away to college, there's a lot of concerns. You know, you're like, now remember, you want to make sure about this and you want to make sure about this. You know, she grew up in New Jersey. Obviously, she has street smarts. Would you agree to that?
Did. But I think also where we live and where she grew up, it was a little bit of a bubble. So she didn't grow up in harder times and harder environments than what I grew up. I grew up in a much different environment. And we, so, you always want to do more for your kids. So we, I guess where we lived kind of sheltered her a little bit. But, you know, when you go out with your friends and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and if you had several drinks, you know, some of that street smartness, some of the cautions that we take as kids goes away. And that's the big problem. One of the big problems with this and why we're doing what we're doing.
Okay. When I know Sammy, she traveled abroad, right? So this wasn't the first time she was away from home.
Yeah. And it was, we were really hesitant to send her because every time, every year when she's at University of South Carolina, I would say every 6 weeks and almost to the day, she would call us, text us and saying, I want to come home or come on down. And it actually started, Greg, her boyfriend, said it was that you got it every 6 weeks. It started actually every 4 weeks. So we were real hesitant to send her because we're like, once you're there, you're there. You're not coming home from Barcelona. But that, I think, really matured her, made her smarter streetwise, made her just a more of a rounder person in the experience of traveling. She went to 12 countries.
Wow.
When she was traveled abroad in Barcelona, Spain. So she did all right for herself.
She's
been to more countries than I have.
And in probably me as well, and many others. When my sister was murdered, my mom said to me, I always worried about all of you at college. I always worried about you waiting for a ride late at night or in the restrooms or in areas of isolation. But never in her wildest dreams did she ever think that somebody would take her daughter's life. When you prepared Sammy to go off, there were different things I'm sure you talked to her about, you know, about safety and numbers or, you know, whatever it was. Did you ever consider ride sharing to be dangerous prior to this?
No, never even had a second thought. And I think that, you know, since we've experienced it, and anytime anybody experiences something so traumatic, or if you have a friend or a relative that has done this, you start to look at things completely different and you start digging in to situations and to different things. And I mean, we didn't think a second about sending her on an Uber. She would call me. She called me that night because supposedly her credit card wouldn't work, her debit card. So she always used mine, and she goes, can I just use yours, please, again, you know, to go? And, you know, and then I want to come home. And I'm like, okay, I'm watching you. I got my eye on you. So, yeah, we thought that was the safer way of transportation, especially at night. And if you're especially with your female, and if you're traveling with one or two people, it's definitely, we thought, better than walking or getting into a car and driving drunk. We thought it was a great form of transportation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But little did we know that how unsafe and unreliable, or how they do not continuously do background checks back then, and how they, you know, how anybody can impersonate. We had no clue.
Well, tell us a little bit, as much as you can and as much as you're willing to share, about that night. We know she was 21 years old. She was a senior in college and she was in a sorority. So she had a lot of, you know, a lot of fun, a lot of excitement going on in her life. Tell us about the events leading up to that night.
Yeah, so the weekend before, she was actually home. And that's when she visited and had a student acceptance day at Drexel University for the law school. So she was going back and forth between Drexel and Rutgers. Drexel offered her full scholarship. Rutgers was offering her 70%. And that was actually, she was supposed to come home that weekend, that Thursday night, to go to student acceptance day on that Friday. So I said to her, Sam, how can you pass up a full scholarship? I said, you'll be fine. She goes, that's okay. Yeah. She goes, you're right. She goes, I haven't gone out with my friends in such a long time. And since, you know, a lot of us are going to either law school, graduate school, or whatever, we haven't celebrated. And this would be a great time to go celebrate and hang out. Samantha also had a job down there. So that night, she went out. As I mentioned, she texted me about using the Uber. And she went out to hang out with her roommates, hang out with her friends at the bar. And then, and it was really about, because she hasn't, again, she didn't see them for a while, a lot of her friends, and a lot of them didn't know that she was actually accepted to law school. She was supposed to see Greg on that Friday night. She was supposed to go to Mount Pleasant where Greg and his parents live because he had just graduated. So she was at the bar. She had to work the next morning. And so she actually left the bar earlier than her roommates and friends because she had to get up to go to work earlier. That's why she was by herself. She was on the phone talking to Greg because there were some things going on medically with someone in the household. So she was all upset. And that's, you know, she just wasn't paying attention because she was talking to Greg and she was upset about it. And that's why she was upset all night. So, so that's when she got into the car. And we watched the video. Every time I watch it, I said, no, 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 don't get in, don't get in. But the next day we had Greg called Marcy and said about 1 o'clock, saying that Samantha's missing. Marcy called me. She goes, have you spoken to Greg or her roommates? And I said, no. Why, what's up? She said, Samantha's missing. I said, well, get home now. She was, what do you mean? I said, get home now, pack a bag, and we're going down. I don't know what it was. It was just a panic. And it was like, we're either flying down or we're driving down. So she came home. We threw stuff in a suitcase. I was on the phone already with the police because the police were at the apartment. And I had my oldest daughter, Sydney, had a 1 week break that week. She was just finishing up because she was in nursing school. So she was on the phone with Uber trying to find out where she was because she used my credit card and we knew that. And I got charged $5 from Uber for missing her car, but not being picked up. So we're trying to figure everything out. Excuse me. And, she came home when we started driving down. I was still on the phone with the police, probably a good hour on my first part of the road.
How long is the drive?
Typically, it's about 11 hours, wow. 11 and a half, 11, about 11 hours. It took me about 10 hours that day. And so we got down there. We left here about 2 o'clock. We got there about midnight. And halfway down the ride, we were in contact with one of the police officers there, Detective Odom. And she called at one point and said, what time are you going to be down here again? I said, well, the ETA is midnight. She goes, okay. And then called again, saying that when you do get here, just come into the back, whatever, and or give us a call and we'll let you in. And it was when we just hung up one of those two phone calls, I just said to myself, this is not going to end well. This isn't good. It's just a feeling that I had. And sure enough, when we get down there and we called Greg and her roommate saying that we're going straight to the police station. We're not coming to her apartment. We're going to go straight there. I said, why don't you guys meet us there? So they got there. We got there. They told us there were people waiting to tell us.
Did you know when you walked in?
When I walked into the room, yeah. Because they weren't the smartest people. They weren't the sharpest tools in the shed. There were three or four people sitting there. One of the guys had a vest on and said coroner's office. So I pretty much caught on right away about it. And they said that they had found a body and so forth. So Greg and a lot of her roommates, some of her roommates, I think all of her roommates, I think except for one because she was out of the country, came to the police station. They pulled them into a side room and started questioning them. And then they asked if we wanted to tell them or if they want or if they should tell them. And I said, no, I want to tell them. So they brought them all into a room when they were all done questioning. And that's where we proceeded to tell them what had happened.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I'm sorry for, you know, your family, of course, your wife, Marcy.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things was, when we left here in Robbinsville, Sydney was still here. She wanted to come. I said, no, stay here. We'll fill you in and on everything. And she then went to a neighbor's house that night. My sister came up. My cousins, one of my sets of cousins came over to my neighbors. Telling Sydney that her sister is no longer here is one of the hardest things I ever had to do in my life. And obviously it still upsets me.
Of course.
That was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry that you all had to go through this and that you have to live with this.
Yep.
I do want to talk about the good that you are doing with this. I want to just take you back just a little bit to that night in that neighborhood that Sam was in. It was called the Five Points District. Is that somewhere that she frequented?
Yeah, all the kids often? Do. It's right on the edge of the campus. We've been there. I've been there. I've been in there with Samantha and a couple different bars. When I go down to visit her, it's where all the kids hang out. And there's a bunch of bars and restaurants there. It's a very high frequent place where the kids go from there.
And so when she called the Uber, the car that she got in, this guy was posing as an Uber driver. Is that correct?
Correct.
And when Sam got into the car, he hit the auto locks.
Well, the auto locks were, yes, he hit the auto locks, but the child safety locks were engaged. So she had no chance of getting out in that. And at the trial that we participated in this in the summer of 21, it showed him actually driving around several times looking for somebody. Parking lot right next to her, he watched her trying to get into a different car that pulled off because it wasn't an Uber. Then he pulled in right behind, and that's where she just got in.
Well, let's talk about the good that you're doing to help educate others. So this type of tragedy doesn't happen to anybody else. You and your wife have started the What's My Name Foundation. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the What's My Name Foundation was started almost probably within a month, 2 months after everything happened. And at the vigils, when I got up to speak, I said, I want to make this my mission, that to never have this happen to anyone again. At the time, A, I didn't realize what I was even really saying, but B, I didn't realize how bad things actually were and are within the industry of the rideshare. So this foundation that we started, the What's My Name, and using Samantha's nickname, Sammy, we started trying to educate colleges, companies, states, trying to create federal laws, And it's really just using the information that's already on the apps for the rideshare. The problem is that most people, I'm saying most, don't know the difference between a Chevy Impala and Ford Focus, right? So having the make of the car on the app really doesn't do a lot for most people. It's really about, and especially the younger college kids, it's about stopping, slowing down, right? And then the A is for ask. Ask, what's my name? We want to make sure that you're doing all these safety procedures before you get into the car. Because once you're in the car, it's too late. You can ask all the questions you want, but if the child safety locks are engaged, the auto locks are engaged, you cannot get out. So we want to do all this. And that's part of what the foundation does and part of using the SAMI acronym of the stop, ask, what's my name, match the license plate and the display of the car, make of the car. And then the I is inform, right? You can share your ride details with a loved one or with a friend and they can track. So that's what the foundation is, because when everything happened with Samantha, every college that I've ever spoken to or every police force that I have spoken to, has went into a complete panic when this happened. There is no education. There is no signage. There is no reminders for this. When we came up with this, this is the first time they were like, oh God, this is what we want. This is what we need. So the foundation was really based off of those premises of doing everything before getting into the car, not having this happen to anyone again. So the foundation, I go to conferences, to colleges, to different states, municipalities. We give back to charities. Last year we gave 8 college scholarships, partial scholarships to local high schools in our area. And it's just about educating the kids, starting at a young age to even adults, where we've got emails saying, thank you, what you have done and using SAMI codes, you know, it saved my life. I didn't get into a car that was impersonating an Uber.
I know you're doing a lot of work. They've passed SAMI's law, and you're also working with lawmakers in Congress to pass some other laws. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so some of the states in the East Coast passed some of their laws. New Jersey has the best law right now, where they're using a QR code to get in to confirm the ride before getting into the car. So we've been working with Congressman Chris Smith and trying to create a federal law. And we do this independently of the foundation, because you can't mix politics with the foundation. So we've been working now for the last 2 years, 2.5 years. Congressman Chris Smith came to our house asking what he could do. And from that point, probably 2 months into it, we started working on creating this federal law. And we brought in Uber, we brought in Lyft. Uber spent $2 million lobbying against us. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, in 2021. They first agreed with us and went and wrote a letter of support for the House, and then went to the Senate and went to every Republican senator opposing it. And Rand Paul and Mike Lee opposed it, and how we had the bill written and trying to pass it, we had to have 100% of the senators. We could not have 99 or 98%. We couldn't have the majority. We had to have everyone unanimous consent in order for this. And then we had the bill put into another bill where the president, Trump, was supposed to said yes, put it in. And then 2 days later, he said, take it out. And we've never heard why. And so we're starting to fight again this year, trying to work with Uber and trying to work with Lyft. We've already had calls working with very closely with both sides of the aisle, because I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. So Congressman Chris Smith's team, they've been great, been supportive, working with Speaker Pelosi's chief of staff. And I can just keep going on, you know, all four corners of the government and some others as well. And it's really about creating federal laws and trying to use the confirmation before getting into the car. And it doesn't matter. So Uber has a 4-digit PIN that confirms the ride before you get into the car. Lyft does not have that yet, or doesn't use that type of technology. They want to use something else, but they haven't finished developing it. So there's actually 25 rideshare companies in North America. So it's just not Uber and Lyft. There's other ones out there as well that are gaining momentum because of the pandemic and going back out. So we're trying to just create where the ride is confirmed before getting into the car, that handshake. And then there's other parts of the federal law where about signage, personating, doing studies, and creating a council.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you for all the work that you and your family, and of course your foundation, is doing. Do you ever, and obviously this is a big part of your life, this is your life.
This, I quit my job to do this. I constantly ask, how the hell did we get here? Mm. What happened? You know, I do this for two different reasons. And one of the reasons is a selfish reason. The main reason I do it is because of Samantha. I don't want anybody to forget who she is. I'm trying to keep her memory alive, to keep her out there. You know, that's harder for me because I'm constantly talking about it, constantly doing interviews, constantly going to DC to talk about it and listening and dealing with it, going to colleges, conferences. So I'm constantly reliving the nightmare, but it's keeping her memory and her image and her name out there. So that's the main reason I do it. And then the second reason really is to help others, to make sure that this doesn't happen to anyone else again, because this is the worst nightmare that you could ever have. We weren't allowed to see her. We weren't allowed to identify her body because of how brutal. You know, as much as you can say goodbye, we weren't able to have any type of closure like that. So, you know, if I can prevent anyone from getting raped, any type of sexual assault, keeping them alive, that is the second reason why I do it. And again, I get it. It's very selfish of me because the main reason is Samantha. But
I don't think it's selfish at all, because had this never happened, you wouldn't be doing this. So I find that to be completely unselfish. And what you're doing is so honorable, because I know that it's difficult. And I know that it's difficult for family members and the different nightmares that you have and the different visions that you have. And I want you to always remember the good in Sammy, like we started our conversation, and the happiness that she had and how many best friends she had and how wonderful she was. And I know that, you know, when you are talking about it all the time, it's almost like a numbing thing. You know, the emotions are there, the hurt is there, and you just kind of deliver the message. But, you know, I hope you get to a place where those visions of her happiness and her smile and the way she talked, that those come through for you.
I do. It does. The way that she would enter a room, how she would enter it, what she would say, they're all still in my mind. I still hear it. So awesome. I do hear that.
Yeah. Awesome. That. Awesome. Well, listen, is there anything else that you would like to add that I haven't asked you about today, Seymour?
No, just a reminder that, you know, that the foundation is a 501c. So we do depend upon donations, things of that nature. There is ways for municipalities and states and colleges to go on our website of whatsmyname.org to purchase signs from us, education material. I will come out and speak to colleges and groups. That's not a problem. You know, again, I quit my job to do this. It's a foundation, 501c. Nobody takes a dollar, a dime from this. This all goes back, to the general public and for the education. So that's really about the most important part is of all this that I'm talking about is that, you know, the material is there, the education is there. We just have to get it out and we have to remind people to slow up and do these steps.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I wish I could take away what you've went through. I know I can't, but I just want to say God bless you for everything that you're doing. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today and sharing this story, which I know is difficult. And I am so sorry about what happened to Sammy and for the loss for your family.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
To learn more how you can make a difference, either through education or by donations, please visit whatsmyname.org. Between the years 2017 and 2019, Lyft has had over 4,000 sexual assault claims. Uber has had over 5,900. The next time you take rideshare, whenever you take rideshare, remember Sammy. S. Stop. Slow down. A. Ask. What's my name? M. Match the license plate. Match the vehicle. I. Inform others about your ride. In our next episodes with Always Bev, The Ripple Effect, I have my first victim to share her experience with sex trafficking and another victim with online dating and how she was scammed with crypto and lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. If you enjoyed this podcast, if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, give us a review, and keep us going to help educate as many people as we can to keep them safe. I'm your host, Barb Jordan. Thanks for joining me in another episode of Always Bev, The Ripple Effect.